You got some of that ambrosia for me?
Yes. Aged
Yes.
100 years. But keeping the good stuff for myself.
Yeah. There was so much to like in this episode. I like this one a lot.
It was a good episode. It was indeed a good episode of Battlestar Galactica. I think
Be
it was episode 7, I believe.
yeah. Before Bane was Bane. You know how Bane grew up in a prison?
Oh, yeah. At first, I didn't
There were
quite
these
get
the,
the.
there were these guys. I mean, that was cool. I mean,
Yeah.
I'm sure that concept has been around for a while, but I guess my first realization of it was Bane, how he was raised in a prison for the sins of his father.
Yeah.
And these guys were like generations in prison. And they
Right.
even had the prison cages were open. They were they just kept themselves there.
And they didn't even, they had no resistance. You see, the
Yeah.
episode is called The Long Patrol. It was episode 7 of the series.
I liked it so much better than the previous one. That was like a, it was more like a standalone, you know, Apollo, and this is kind of like more of a standalone Starbuck. But
Right.
I like the fact that he's such a jerk. I mean,
Starbuck.
yeah, the scene where he's going back and forth between the women is just hilarious.
Yeah. That was another classic plot that you see
He
in
did that
TV
in the
shows.
three-part movie too, if you remember when they were on the planet.
Oh, yeah, that's
They
true.
were both in the same room with them at the same exact time. And it's just
Right,
so
right.
weird.
Just going back and forth. Whereas this time, he had, well, it seems like he originally had a date with, I forget.
Andromeda.
Yeah. And then he thought that she wasn't going to be able to make it, so he made a date with Cassiopeia. And he got a private room.
And he paid a lot of money for this thing.
Yeah, but then while Cassiopeia was away, his other date showed up, so he got another room.
Which is a dangerous game to play because that's Adama's daughter.
Right. Yeah.
He doesn't
But
seem to care. Well, not only is it a really dangerous, it's his best friend's sister.
right.
So, I mean, that is a really dangerous game to play.
Yeah. Yeah, he doesn't mind taking risks when it comes to the ladies. But so yeah. He does the classic trying to keep two dates going at once. You see it a lot of times on sitcoms and things like that.
Yeah, like Three's Company's notorious for
Right.
it.
And sure enough, I mean, he gets out of there because he's called to attend his mission that he's supposed to be going on. But he doesn't really get out of it because Athena and Cassiopeia run into each other as they're leaving. The waiter, the guy that worked there, was funny though, because he said, I admire your daring. And he's like, well, it's not. And Starbuck thought he was talking about the mission he was about to go on. He's like, oh, it's not a big deal. It's just a recon and stuff. He's like, no, I'm talking about what you're trying to do with the two ladies here.
Yeah,
But
I can't believe he got himself in that situation and he kept trying to roll with it.
yeah.
And he had given them both like rings when they bump or like some piece of a jewelry and they had the exact same piece.
Yeah,
And
that's how
that's how
they
they ran
knew it,
into
yeah.
each other and they're like, "Holy crap."
Because
But
they
he's
were both walking out, looking at the jewelry like it was something special, and they bumped into each other and they're both looking at the same piece of
Yeah.
jewelry.
And this is cool because they introduced a Viper, like a really long range Viper, but in order to make it have all the power it needed to travel at the speeds it needed to travel at, they took all the weapon systems off of the Viper to go on these long missions. And they also supplied it with Ciri. Oh, I mean Cora. And that was it had like an autopilot, which is really cool.
That's the sexy version of
Of
Siri.
Ciri,
That's
yeah.
what Daryl wishes Siri
Well, I
was.
bet you the inventor of Ciri had Cora in mind. I bet you.
It probably has his own private
Or your
version.
HAL, you know, from 2001, A Space Odyssey, you know, something like that.
Oh yeah, those are your inspirations for sure.
I like Cora though, 'cause she was very, I don't know, she was. I guess Buck had one too. I can't remember which one that was, but it was very she cared for him, like whoever the pilot or the owner of the ship was, she was concerned for
Yeah,
his safety.
she had a sort of a sarcastic attitude, a playful, definitely flirtatious attitude with him, because she was able to pretty much kind of do everything herself. But and so she would tease him because obviously, as a human, his reaction times weren't quite as accurate as hers. But the reason that he's going on this mission is because, which I thought was cool, way to sort of keep the overall plot going forward, is that they at the beginning of the episode are leaving their star system. They're going through a asteroid dust, and when they get to the other side of it, they're into a new star system, not the Milky Way, but they're sort of traveling on their way, continuing to go towards Earth. And so the Starbuck volunteers, and they and they're
He has a
surprised that
motive,
it's
yeah. He
yeah
has a better
Starbuck
motive.
that was volunteer, but the reason he volunteered was for that date that we were just talking about, was that it would give him a opportunity to move up the list and get in that evening to that exclusive restaurant. So it wasn't totally selfless motivation.
Yeah. It's so much him. And he pulls like a this is like a trap that you could probably do for Knutson, you know, like the ambrosia, lead him to the ambrosia. But the thing, I don't know if you noticed this, but there was that gun prop. Do you know how that policeman is chasing the smuggler initially? If you look at the gun prop on his ship, that's like from Buck Rogers, totally, like
Oh
one of
yeah,
the
I didn't.
ships. Yeah, and we had talked about them sharing props, you know. But that was definitely a thing from I think it was the older fighter pilots when they had the older ships. They had those little the zoom in on the gun props, how they would shoot their lasers was definitely used in this. But yeah, this was just awesome because he goes on this and then he starts playing games. He's like, he doesn't know this guy's like a policeman or whatever, but he saves the smuggler and he follows the smuggler down to the planet. And then he's tricked by the smuggler when he goes to get liquor because the guy gets liquor and it's ambrosia. And he's like, look at this. And he starts drinking and he lets his guard down. And then the smuggler, who looks really familiar to me, and I have Barbara look him up because I was like, God, this actor looks so familiar to me. And he turns out that he was in Baa Baa Black Sheep with Robert Conrad, which is another series I'd like to revisit. But it was a series I watched religiously as a kid. Like even my friend that lived four doors down, we would watch Baa Baa Black Sheep together because we just dug the show so much. And
Yeah, did you post something about that show
yeah, I did.
the
I
other day?
posted.
'Cause I saw that, and that was the first I ever even heard of that show, honestly.
Yeah. Well, the only reason I remember it is because I was like this actor. I said, Barb, this guy reminds me of somebody so, like something I used to watch, and I couldn't place him, and so she started, you know, looking around and tracing his history, and she goes, Huh, I wonder if you watched Ba Ba Black. And I said, yeah, that's it.
That's
Because
funny.
that's what he's known for. He's kind of like one of those
Okay.
actors that appears in everything, you know, but yeah, but never really has a show of his own.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah, I didn't recognize him. But I thought the supporting cast for the episode was pretty good, including him. I mean, he's
Well,
the main.
I thought they were fascinating. Even the people in the jail cells, I thought they were great.
Yeah, because so basically what you have is when Starbuck enters this new galaxy, he doesn't really know what's going on, as you said, but he pursues the ship, the kind of cargo looking ship being pursued by the fighter pilots, because as far as he can tell, these fighter pilots are going after an unarmed ship. And as you said, it turns out to be a smuggler, and the smuggler, he's by the sort of police looking fighter pilots that are pursuing him, being called robber. They were not really sure the significance of that right away. But then later on, as you said, Starbuck gets knocked out by the smuggler who steals his ship.
He gets Knutsen'd. No, I'm just kidding.
Does
Lay a
Keith get
trap
knocked
with
out?
lay a trap with
Yeah.
Keith. That's what I would do if I had to lay a trap, is I'd put all these nice beers, you know.
Yeah, get a bunch of. Tell him there's an
I don't
exclusive
think
beer.
ambrosia would
Can't try
work
anywhere
because
else.
ambrosia seems like some kind of like alcohol, but not a beer,
Right.
like a wine-ish thing. At least to me, that's what I picture it to be.
Yeah, I think I keep thinking of it like a mead or something like that, where
Yeah, because it's
it's made
dated.
from
Because
honey.
they get excited when it's dated, like wine, right?
Yeah, which is like wine, where you age it.
Where beer is not like that, right? Or is some beers like that, where you could age it and it's better? I don't know much about alcohol, so.
Generally, you don't age them a long time. I think sometimes there's certain types of beers, they'll age them in a certain kind of barrel to affect the flavor, but I don't think they do it for long periods of time. You don't hear like you do with wine, like, oh, this has been aged for this amount of time
Yeah.
or anything like that, but
Its value increases as it ages.
right.
Yeah.
But anyways, what you have then is Starbuck wakes up, so he's got to take the smuggler's ship, and then he's pursued because he's got the smuggler's ship by the same forces that were pursuing the smuggler, and he ends up jailed on this planet. And basically, what you have is this colony that was abandoned in the wars, and they've all been abandoned, but the people in power have sort of maintained the lie that the war is still going on, so that the prisoners are still kept in their cells because they think the war is still going on, and they've basically been prisoners for generations, like we talked about at the beginning of the episode. They're
Yeah, it sounded like 3 generations at least
at
deep.
least, yeah.
And then they breed with each other, so
Yeah.
it's so weird. And they usually call each other by what their crime is. So like if they're a prostitute or if they're a thief or it's whatever they are, that's what their names are. They don't refer to each other and they're like, "What is a Starbuck? What crime is a Starbuck?"
Yeah, what is Starbucking?
Yeah, what is
Yeah.
Starbucking?
Yeah, they don't have names anymore. There's a woman that, and they seem to almost kind of embody their identities, because a woman that's her name is Adultery,
Yeah.
and she's just like, she's dressed really scantily, and so I mean, eventually the guards want to start calling Starbuck Bootlegger and tell him
Yeah.
that's his name now and stuff, Bootlegger with a number after it.
Matter of fact, he's getting pestered by that one guard in that one scene. That's when he realizes the cage is open because he's like, "Yeah, I'm gonna take this from you." And he goes up
Right.
to the cage, and he pushes it open. And he's like, "What the hell? These things are open!" And then that guy just like chicken shits out of there and just runs out the door.
Yeah.
But I found it fascinating. I just loved this episode. It had so many things that I really dug about
Yeah.
Starbuck.
Well, and the other prisoners are scared when he starts to open the cell. I mean, because they've just totally embraced the lie, and they think that they're contributing to the war effort by making ambrosia. And then
Yeah.
in the meantime, they're kept drunk as a way of, keeping them in line. They're kept drunk all the time. They're always drinking ambrosia. And so once Starbuck realized the cells aren't even locked, he realizes what's going on, and so then he starts to tell them the truth about what's going on. He's like, all the ambrosia that you guys are making, it's just sitting out there on the docks.
Yeah,
It's not even being used for
and he
anything.
tells him that he's a colonial warrior too.
Yeah, and that the war. So, I mean, basically, this colony got forgotten, and the ones that were in charge of the prisoners just kept up the lie to keep things.
But knowing Starbuck, he sees dollars in this too.
Yeah, right.
I mean, he sees like all this ambrosia. I could be a millionaire, because he's even mentioned in prior episodes how he wants to make money so he doesn't have to be a colonial warrior. He
Right,
could
yeah,
just
they really
go do
address
his own
that.
thing, because he was even trying to hire those singers early on. So he's
Early
like a
on, yeah.
business guy. He's looking out for himself.
Right, yeah, in the first story, I think he talked about that. And so, meanwhile, the Galacticas, this was supposed to be a recon mission, and so they're tracing everything that comes from Starbuck, and they're once Robber takes a control of his ship, he starts putting out a message, and he's trying to it's a eventually Cassiopeia, because her background was her father was a merchant or something, she recognizes it as a merchant code, and he's trying to send it out, not realizing that where he's sending it out is actually to an area that the Cylons are now under control. So they're tracking all this back in the Galactica, and they send out Boomer and Apollo after Starbuck to try
To
to figure out.
shoot, well, to, also to shoot the plane down,
Right, so it
because
doesn't, right?
they do not want that technology to get into the wrong hands. And
Yeah.
I've seen, God, is it the new Battlestar Galactica? I'm almost positive it's a new Battlestar Galactica where they did a same sort of story where Apollo went out with the Viper that could go really fast.
Oh,
I
okay.
could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it was in that. It was either that or a comic book I read, because I read the Battlestar Galactica comic books too. So sometimes I get confused because they do a really good job of, making their voices sort of similar. So I sometimes get lost. But they go after to shoot the plane down. And I found this guy fascinating because they follow him down to a planet, and they end up chasing him. They could have taken the Viper back, which I think would have achieved their goal, but they go after the Robber, I think, because they want to know what happened to Starbuck. If
Yeah.
they just took the ship back, they would have achieved their mission, but they wouldn't have found out anything about Starbuck, because these guys are like best friends. So they
Right, they're
want,
still holding out hope that he's okay, even
that he's
though,
alive. Yeah.
yeah, it's not likely from their
And
perspective.
there's even like a really good scene with Andromeda and Cassiopeia, because she goes and tells Cassiopeia that he's dead. And even though they're like rivalries for his affection, they kind of, had a bond there. It was weird. It was weird, but it was like a ménage à trois bond. I don't know what it was, but
Well, I guess she kind of recognizes that Cassiopeia cares about Starbuck as well, so she's not gonna, because Starbuck may not be okay, she It's not gonna hold a grudge because she realizes it's not really Cassiopeia's fault. It's Starbuck is the one. So she's bigger than that, and she's gonna let Cassiopeia know what's going on with Starbuck. She knows she's probably really wondering, you know.
Yeah. So they go off after him and find out that this guy has a family and they have a little daughter, and he essentially escaped the prison system, which I find awesome because he wanted to keep his daughter away from growing up in that prison system and serving out time, and then her kids serving out time, and they were just in this circle of hell. So I really thought this character was really cool. And he tells them about the prison, so they go after him, and then there's like a Cylon attack because the Cylons are trying to find Galactica. Galactica says, we have to get out of this area, even though they might not be able to find us, because Adama's always looking out for the fleet. And I think he's doing that because he feels like his sin caused him to be in the situation where they were. Because he could have made a call early on, and he didn't, and it caused him to be in this situation. So now he's like willing to sacrifice his son, and he's telling Boxy that everything's okay, which for a second episode in a row he's doing that, Boxy, comforting Boxy because Boxy is worried about his dad, and he's telling him stories of Earth and all that. But the Cylons actually get there and they start attacking, but they get in their Vipers and fight them back. And they have a really cool scene where Starbuck crashes a Cylon plane into the ground because he knows that his plane has all these capabilities. And Korra actually says, "If I do this move, you're gonna pass out. You know that, right?" And sure enough, he does. But
But
it.
yeah, it's a specific maneuver because the Cylons show up because they pick up on that transmission that Robber was putting out.
Yeah.
So even though the new plane doesn't have any it doesn't have any lasers because that's they had to remove them to make it as fast as it is to put that technology in there and
Do you remember? I am having a hard time remembering this. Last time I remember, Baltar was trapped in that pyramid thing. How did he get out? Did the Cylons find him and then bring him to what's his name?
you
'Cause
know,
he was back on the chair.
yeah, I do remember him being, it was didn't surprise me to see that, and I think I do remember him being brought out,
By the Cylons.
and being put in control of that group, but I don't remember exactly how it happened,
Yeah, as
to be honest.
I really dug the episode. They essentially fight the Cylons, destroy the planes, and then go back to the Galactica.
Yeah, it was a really
But they
solid
le
episode.
left all the people there, I think. And the Ambrosia was destroyed. The Cylons destroyed the Ambrosia where it was stored.
Yeah, well, all the firing on the fight and stuff like that, even though it was successful as far as winning, and you knew that was going to happen when Starbuck was talking about how he's going to be rich and stuff. You knew
Yeah.
that was going to happen. But no, I mean, there was that scene at the end, where at least, but I think they pretty much brought all of them with them,
Yeah.
onto the Battlestar. Because there's that scene at the end where Robber and his family are having dinner with all of them.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Which I thought that was, I mean, we probably won't see them again, but I did think it was cool
Because
that
they were talking about Earth, because somebody had drawn in Starbuck's prison cell the formation of the planets, the constellation. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the other thing, because Boxy had a map that he drew that he was showing everybody, like, you know, this when I grow up, I want to be a fighter pilot too. And he had drawn a map of the solar system, of basically of our solar system, that based off the story that Adama had told him. And so, yeah.
Starbucks says you drew it wrong. That's what
Right,
happened.
that
It came to everybody's attention.
basically referring to Earth, you said, oh, that planet should be over here. And they looked at him like, well, how would you know that? And then he realized that it was drawn on the cell that he was in, and then Robert tells him, oh, that was the silent one, that they talked, that there
Yeah.
was this guy that never spoke that was in the prisons with them for a while, and he had just drawn those maps on his cell. So it kind of tied you into the whole search for Earth thing again with that.
Yeah, I was glad you mentioned though the ambrosia in the prison, because I didn't correlate that. They were keeping them drunk
Yeah.
to be submissive and keep them in their cages. And
Right.
that's what caused the Starbuck to, because the one guard was like, "Drink your ambrosia," and he wasn't drinking it.
Right.
Yeah. I
Yeah.
guess I didn't put two and two together like you did, because I was like, okay, maybe that's why they didn't ever escape. They were drunk all the time.
Well, yeah, I think it was a combination of that and just when you talk about generation after generation, it's just all
They
that
were
they know.
raised, yeah, it's all
Yeah.
they know.
So it's just probably a combination. That was the main reason that they just kept them drunk to help it out. Just to make it that much easier
What was
to
the
keep it
title again?
submissive.
The long what? Oh, I can't remember what it was called.
I said it. It's the Long Voyage or something like that. I'll
Yeah.
get it in a second here. But yeah, it was definitely a solid episode. I enjoyed it. It was The Long Patrol.
Long Patrol.
So yeah, if you it's seventh episode if you count the first three episodes individually, even though they were one long story. So we're almost a third of the way through. There's 24 episodes
Yeah.
of the 1978 series, and then you have Galactica 1980.
I hope that stays around long enough. I know I didn't like it very much, but I want to
Galactica
revisit
1980.
it. Yeah, I hated it.
Yeah, there
But,
was only 10 episodes.
I want to watch it like I watched the we watched the la the second season of Buck Rogers.
Yeah, where it's not as well thought of, but
Yeah.
there were some things that were redeeming about it.
All right.
Cool.
We have one question from, let's see. I just have to find it because I.
I think
Oh,
what
this is from Nick Wetmore. He gives us good questions. It says, "What version of a team book would you like to see brought back?" Thinking of different launches of Doom Patrol, like he's because of the relaunch of the Doom Patrol, he's saying like, "What team would you like to see back?"
Yeah. I saw that question, and I is it okay to I want, I think both of the answers that I have are teams that we probably are going to get back.
No, I think that's good.
It's not 100% confirmed yet, but I think from the DC Rebirth special, it looks like we're going to get back both the Legion and the JSA.
Yeah.
And with the JSA, I'd like to sort of see it go back to the JSA series, not versus Justice League of or Justice Society of America spelled out, just in the sense of I think it'll be good for them to keep the team on the smaller side, and maybe do Avengers style like back in the 80s where you have a core team and then you have different members come and go and stuff like that. But I think at least for early on to keep people on board and to keep people interested, it might be good to keep the team smaller instead of how kind of prior to the New 52 you had the such a they brought in so many different characters and you had the JSA All-Star spinoff team and stuff like that. Might be a little bit too much too soon if they go that route. And with the Legion, Paul Levitz himself said if the next time Allegiance comes back, it might be a reboot. But I think that I would like to see kind of done, Rebirth style, where we have a lot of there's connections there and things that are faithful to the team history. I think they've done a good job of that across the board with Rebirth.
It was one
Sort
of
of.
the series that off the New 52 launch I really enjoyed. And I don't know if it was because of the art team, where they had that like Kirby-esque stuff, or if it was just the stories, but I personally enjoyed the Legion of Superheroes and Legion Lost. I really dug those two titles. So, yeah, I hope they keep some of that intact because I think they built a lot of good continuity there. But before that, there was like the Legion of Three Worlds, which had different generations, and that it's kind of like that Hawkman thing with the Legion. They keep reinventing them, trying them in different ways, and then trying to explain it later on, like with the Legion of Three Worlds. Well, these were three different legions, and then you had Legionnaires where they all had their pouches and such, and they changed their name. That was really a drastic change, in my opinion, because it was their names changed to Leviathan, and instead of Colossal, it was a really drastic shift.
Yeah, and I think because they already went through the work with Legion of Three Worlds to sort of explain all that and streamline it and bring it into one version again, I think that they could build off and maintain some of that history, just like they've done with other Rebirth titles. I think they can do it in such a way that it's new reader friendly, and I think that was one of the mistakes that they made, that like unlike a lot of the new 52 titles, for some reason they chose not to take that route with the Legion, and they put the Legion origin story in a mini series that came out after the other titles had already started.
Yeah,
And
there
I
were
think,
three Legion series.
a lot of people, I think, the new 52 brought in a lot of attention to all the books. A lot of people, a lot of podcasters tried all the books and talked about them. And a lot of people who didn't have a history with the Legion, it just gave them more of what they, truthful or not, had kind of come to expect from the Legion, that it wasn't new reader friendly. And I think that was a real missed opportunity. I'm pretty confident that when they do, do some kind of thing with the Legion based off of us seeing, I think it was Saturn Girl in the Rebirth special. My confidence is pretty high with DC right now, so I'm thinking they will do it the right way this way, and hopefully that'll mean that more people dig it besides just hardcore Legion fans, and it'll stick around a little longer.
Yeah, it kind of su Legion has always suffered from the X-Men thing, where X-Men, a lot of fans are say it's an unapproachable because of all the different titles and all the different histories. They always have that kind of stuff, and even in design, like when Giant Size X-Men came up, there was Timberwolf and all this other stuff that happens because the creator went over to DC. That started Giant Size X-Men. So, there were correlations to Nightcrawler and all these different characters. But which just I just bought Giant Size X-Men,
Yes,
which
that's
is very weird because
crazy.
I don't run across this book very often, and it was in really, really nice shape, like a VF minus. And it was one of those things that I really looked at it like an opportunity instead of, because I don't know if I'm not the biggest X-Men fan. Like even with Legion, I didn't become a Legion of Superheroes fan until fairly recently. Like I would stay away from the X-Men, stay away from the Legion. I would buy them and I was aware of them. I bought off the rack Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes back in the day. But I never would really get into the, and when I had to drop books, it would always be Legionnaires or Legion or, I'm missing a lot of holes in my Legion collection just because I've never been too much of a fan, and same with X-Men. So I kind of relate the two, because they're kind of like teams that I didn't really dig. But however, you mentioned two teams that you'd like to see back. I'd like to see them back too, but I'd like to see a Batman and the Outsiders, or at least an Outsiders with Geo Force and Black Lightning and all that. And then in the absence of Justice League Dark, I'd like to see Shadow Pact, have some Detective
Oh, that's a good
Chimp
one.
and Blue Devil and all those characters back. Ragman, which is another question that we can get to today. The other one, well, there's so many teams that I'd like to see. I'd like to see a comic book with the Losers, which is a World War II book. I'd be very happy with that. So yeah, there's a lot of properties that I'd like to see. I'd love to see. I love like Suicide Squad type things, and Secret Six is one that I've always enjoyed. So I'd like to, like, every incarnation of it I've enjoyed. I would like to see that back with Gail Simone, because I just can't imagine anybody else playing in that world. But I would take it either way. But there's a lot of teams that I could think of that I'd like to see come back. Oh, Legion, except not Legion of Superheroes, but like Legion 89, Legion 90, the real Doc stuff. I love that stuff. That is like space soap opera stuff that it is freaking amazing. Like, it's some of my best comics that I've read in a long time, and I like that Legion way better than the Legion of Superheroes.
Yeah, those are definitely all good ones.
As far as solo, I miss Jonah Hex, but personally, I would like to see his presence somewhere. Even if I can get him in a holiday special, I don't care. Just give me some Jonah Hex.
Yeah, I was listening to the Darwin Cook tribute that you guys did on
Yeah.
Gotham by Geeks, and you're making me think about Jonah Hex, because that was one of the things you guys covered, and just like, what a good job Palmiotti and Gray did with that.
Oh, they did a that series was like, I mean, it was a different approach than their first ones was all these done in one stories that were really good, kind of like an episode of The Incredible Hulk, with Bill Bixby. I really liked those series, but when they had this ongoing theme in the New 52, I loved it. I love that they put him in the Gotham and was hanging out with the Arkham guy. And it led him into the current time period and stuff, and then back to the past. I don't know, man. That series just, it blew my mind.
Yeah, it was
I
good.
love it. I should own that, like, in trade too, because it's definitely something I want to reread.
Yeah, that was a good one. That was definitely a good series to come out of the New 52. I mean, there was a whole bunch of stuff that I think, from a business perspective, Rebirth, the way they're approaching Rebirth, makes a lot of sense in today's market. But with the New 52, they definitely tried. It was kind of like, let's see what sticks, and they tried a lot of stuff, and I definitely, what even though they might not have been series that last a long time, there was definitely some good stuff to
Oh my
come out of what
God, there
they
was some
tried,
great stuff. It was more diverse than it is now. That's for sure. This what they're doing now is pretty smart. It's actually a really good strategy. It's like taking their really awesome properties and launching them, twice a month, because those sell a lot better.
Yeah,
Then, I
it's
mean,
kind of what
it's
they
an
gotta
awesome
do.
strategy, but it makes total sense. And I, you know what, Chris, I'm really digging the frequency, like, just for the flow, I like getting my books every other week.
Yeah, it helps with nowadays they tend to have the longer storylines that are like six issues a lot of times for the trades and stuff, and it helps with that. It makes those move along faster. Obviously, they move along twice as fast, and if they are going to do the and then it's not all been, six issue stories and stuff like that, but when they do those, it's nice that they move along a little faster because of that. But yeah, I mean, in an ideal world, it'd be cool if more unique titles, diverse titles, sold better. Yeah, I think some of those teams we mentioned, though, like I said, mine, it appears we will eventually get those back, although, maybe sometime next year. I know it's not in the next group of new titles that they're bringing out, but some of the ones you mentioned, I definitely could see some potential. I definitely think we might get some kind of Justice League Dark or Shadow Pact kind of thing again at some point.
Yeah, I would think at some point.
I'd
They're
like to try
kind
that.
of leading that in Hellblazer because you already have Swamp Thing and Hellblazer in there.
That's true. Yeah, I've only read Rebirth number one and then number one, but I like how I liked in number one the inclusion of Swamp Thing
Yeah.
in there. That seems to have a lot of potential, like their interaction and stuff. They're such different characters. It's pretty interesting to see them play off each other. Swamp Thing doesn't have much patience for John Constantine.
Yeah, but I think he appreciates why he does what he does. Like, I don't know if I'm talking past you because you haven't read two yet, because I get confused on what's issue one and two and three,
Sure, yeah.
especially since I'm doing a weekly podcast. It all kinds of blends together,
Right.
the ongoing story. So I don't want to say what goes on, but there's a scene with, you know how Constantine left him with the girl. Well, there's just a she's supposed to help him find Abby, and there's just a scene between those two where he talks about Constantine that I think was really well written.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right, so we have one other question. Let's see if I can find that. It this I know the text of the question. I don't know if I know all the content.
Yeah, that one was on
Oh, that was on
Facebook.
Geek Brunch thread. That's why I couldn't find it. And it was from Ross. It had to do with Ragman. That's what brought the Shadow Pack thing in. But
You find it? Yeah, because I think I have it.
yeah, go ahead and read it because I can't
There
for
we go.
some reason.
Because I just saw it in my notifications. He says, with Ragman showing up on Arrow, have you read Ragman's original five-issue run from 1976? His origins and powers are unique, and he's one of the few Jewish superheroes. What are your thoughts on Ragman?
Oh, I think Ragman is fantastic. Like I bought all his five issue series once I read the one that came out in the 80s. I can't remember what that series was. It was Cry Suit for Suit of Souls and Cry of the Dead, and then there was the mini series. And all of these series, like I own every single one of them, so I own all his appearances, and then I own all the Shadow Pact. There might be some other stuff, and I know he's been in Brave and the Bold and other titles, but I think he's fascinating because the Suit of Souls is like he absorbs the criminals into his suit, and then he could like call upon their thoughts and all that stuff, and they become like a fabric in the fret the in the What's the word I'm using? They become part of his suit, essentially. And he sometimes is Gotham based, which I and he owns like a rags and tatters shop, you know? So like he's interesting. And the other Jewish character is Monolith, which was a Palmiotti in Gray. He's more like a golem, you know, from the Jewish history. And I hear that, well, Monolith was a DC property that they lost, and then they reprinted it, I think, at Dark Horse. It was either Dark Horse or Image as a hardcover. And then they got the property back, kind of like Bloodhound. In the 90s, whatever they did, DC tried a bunch of different properties, and they left the creator, like, if we don't use this property within Time X, you will get your property back. And a lot of that happened with Monolith and Bloodhound and all that stuff. So they got their property back, but Monolith has been optioned. So maybe we'll see something from there. But
That's cool.
I do like that there's, you know, a Jewish superhero. And if I remember correctly, you get to see a lot of that culture thing with his father and such. So kind of like in The Jazz Singer. No, if you've seen that movie and you're a Neil Diamond fan, there's a lot of Jewish culture in there, and his father condemned him for leaving the church, essentially, which he was a singer in. He would sing a Jewish church songs, and went into a musical career. And his father kind of felt betrayed that he did that. The Jazz Singer is one of my favorite movies just because I love Neil Diamond songs. I just think they're awesome. But I don't know how we got there. But yeah, I'd love to see Ragman back.
That'd be cool. I don't have as much history with the character as you do. But I do think he's a very interesting character, and I think it's cool that they're using him on the Arrow, because that can sometimes increase a character's profile, you know.
Yeah, it increases the character's books go up in price too. Yeah, I didn't even know he was on Arrow because I haven't watched the latest Arrow yet. I'm one episode behind, but
Yeah, I'm not up to date on anything anymore. I got sick of I'm a mood watcher when it comes to TV,
I used to do
and
that for comics too, but I'm keeping up lately.
yeah, I mean, sometimes I'm not even in the mood to watch TV in the first place, but when I am in the mood to watch TV, what shows I really prefer to just watch a show when I'm in the mood to watch a show. And for a long time, I tried to keep up with whether it was on a DVR or then later on with Hulu, where they would have the five most recent episodes on, and sometimes I'd go even longer than 5 weeks with feeling like watching a particular show. And so I just got sick of that, and now I don't even try to keep up with shows anymore, and I just like watch seasons
The
when
only
they
one that I
come
have
out.
to watch, I mean, have to, is Walking Dead, and not even Fear the Walking Dead, but Walking Dead because people spoil it. I don't know what there is about that show, but people just can't keep their fucking trap shut. Like
No.
you'll go on
Yeah,
Twitter,
that's
you see
annoying.
a damn meme. You know what I mean? It's like you can't. So me and Barb just said if there's any show we have to watch when it comes out, at least Sunday or Monday night, let's watch Walking Dead, and we'll stay off social media. But
Yeah, I don't blame you.
like yesterday, I was like, do I keep up with my superhero shows last night, or do I watch something I'm in the mood for? And I said, I was in the mood for Fear the Walking Dead or something out of the horror genre, so I watched Fear the Walking Dead instead. But I'm a mood for everything. Like I even when I read my DC stack, which is now as soon as it comes out, I read what I'm in the mood for. Sometimes I'll save the best for last just purposely, 'cause I like know. Like this week, I knew All-Star Batman. I love that story. And I knew Deathstroke, which is another one of my favorites. And Hal Jordan would be at the top of my stack. So I kind of saved them toward the end. But everything else, I kind of read what I was in the mood for. But I have no idea how people read in alphabetical order, like Rob. I just, my
I know
mind
you
can't.
don't. It
My
baffles you.
mind can't comprehend that, like, at all. Like, But I understand that. I understand that some people like to do their thing in order. But it baffles me.
Yeah, I kind of do that to an extent. It depends, but
I
yeah, it's very different from what
prefer,
you do.
like, if I wasn't doing this DC Weekly thing, I much prefer to be a mood reader. That's why I love the format of Gotham by Geeks, because I choose to pick something that I want to read. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And Batman's got like a huge wealth of stories. So I you can't get tired of that type of format. 'Cause
Yes.
you could dig into anything. You could dig into like the Rogues, you know, you could dig into like Penguin if you want to. I could go into Simon Dark if I want to.
Yeah, that's one of the cool things about the show. That's one of the things I like is that it jumps around to different eras of Batman. You get a real sense of what Batman is like, just the overall of Batman, you know.
Yeah.
But Ragman, yeah. I do think that it's cool that he is a Jewish superhero, and I because so many of the creators of the characters that we read about in DC and Marvel were Jewish, you know, and I think in the 60s even they didn't feel like the freedom to create a lot of Jewish
Well, I
superheroes.
think Stan Lee changed his name to take away that typecast.
Same thing with Jack Kirby.
Jack Kirby, yeah.
A lot of them, yeah. I mean, they didn't want to, they hid their Jewishness, and so
Yeah.
yeah, I definitely think it's cool to have Jewish superheroes, and in some ways, it's kind of a tribute to the fact that so much of our hobby is was created by Jewish people.
Yeah. And Cooper, I think, isn't he Jewish? I'm not sure. But he did do the first Ragman. At least he did the covers, I know that for sure.
Joe
Yeah,
Cooper.
well, he did the first issue and the fifth issue.
Yeah, I know it's Cu I know C
And
Cubert
I
is
don't know
spelled
what
K.
Redondo Studio is, but I wonder if it's a studio coming out of the Kubert School. Rob Kanigher is the guy that wrote the original five-issue series. And then the second series was Keith Giffen and Robert Loring Fleming with Pat Broderick and Keith Giffen on art. That was really good. That's where I got interested into it. And they had that store called, with his father, Rags and Tatters. And then there was Cry of the Dead from 93 to 94. That was Elaine Lee, who I don't remember, and Gabriella Morissette on art. So that's an interesting team. Suit of Souls was Christos Gage and Stefan Segovia, which was just a one shot. But yeah, like I think his biggest success as far as being in a team and stuff with Shadow Pack, because that had a really good run. Everything else was kind of a mini, or designed by a mini.
Yeah, Joe Kubert was Jewish, is Jewish,
Yeah.
was, whatever the right way to say that is. He was born actually in a small Jewish community in Poland.
Oh, that I should have known this because he did a book for DC a long time ago called Jew Gangster.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and I read it too. So like yeah, I think if we like lifted up the the covers of who created like all the comics, you'd find it related to the Jewish community.
Oh yeah,
I mean
lots.
a huge percentage of it anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even different companies and companies that didn't succeed, you know, it's it, it is it's pr uh-oh.
On.
Somebody rang your doorbell. So yeah, Shadow Pact ran from 2006 to 2008 by Bill Willingham And Tom Derenick did the art. Phil Winslade did some. Matt Sturgis, who is kind of like Bill Willingham's protege in terms of Fables and everything else. He also did issues of Shadow Pact.
Yeah.
And Bill Willingham is an artist too, which is interesting because he drew the first few issues of Shadow Pact.
Right, yeah. Yeah, he used to do more art then. Yeah, Mabel does a funny thing where she can't get to a lot of the, 'cause she'll bark if she sees people walking by the house or other dogs outside, and she can't really get to the windows to look out them downstairs. But she'll hang out on our bed, and that gives her a view out of the one window.
Yeah.
And so she knows, she'll look, if she thinks someone's going by, she'll run upstairs and jump on the bed and go over to that window. It's pretty funny because if you see it from outside, there's just like this small window on the side of her house, and there's this dog face hanging out on the second floor, staring at you or barking at you. But yeah, she's goofball. So. Anyway, so you want to jump into some comics then? I think that's all the questions,
Yeah,
right?
yeah.
You can start us off if you want.
All right. Well, I'm gonna take you way back to All Star Comics number 8, and I'm not
Whoa.
gonna talk about the Justice Society. I'm gonna talk about Wonder Woman, her introduction to comics.
Okay.
I have never read this before, believe it or not, and you'd be shocked to hear that because I'm such a Wonder Woman buff, but
Yeah.
if I did, I don't remember much of it. And this is really fascinating to read. Like, I really enjoyed this. It is dense. Like, I think it's 8 pages of comic, but it takes you much longer to read those pages. It's actually 9 pages than it does to read today's comic, because there's a lot of prose in it.
Yeah.
But it's really cool to see, like, as we're reading Wonder Woman Year One and Rebirth, to see this, especially one of the particular scenes and the Steve Trevor relationship. But I really dug it. It shows Steve Trevor crash landing onto Paradise Island, and Wonder Woman being really, or Diana being really, curious about his health and curious about him, and she actually falls in love with him in the first issue. And the doctor on Themyscira actually goes to her mom and says, "You need to, Hippolyte Lyte," and tells her, "You need to get your daughter away from this man, because you know what that'll lead to." And she kind of says, "Hey, you're gonna stay away from him," but she doesn't. She's like, "How could you do that? I love him, Mom. Like, why would you do that to me?" And she tells the story, and this is where the prose kind of come in, of the story of what happened between her and Hercules when they trusted man the last time. And he had her get rid of the magic girdle, the girdle that gave her a lot of powers. And Hercules kind of took over the island, and they had to get their power back from them by getting the magic girdle back. And it also introduced this sphere, this kind of like rock that they have, that's a circular sphere that they can go to, and it's hooked up to a machine. And this magic sphere, you can like play into any time of history on anything that's happened on Earth. You have a time dial on it, so you can go back and see. And they actually use this device to find what kind of person he is. And he was really undercover, and they didn't want him to go undercover because he's their most valuable army intelligence officer, and they didn't want to risk losing him. But he goes after this criminal guy who's a Nazi, and I want to find out what his name is because it was really interesting, but I can't remember his name for the life of me. Oh gosh. But anyway, this Nazi guy has a plot to like steal the aircraft planes and bomb the airfields, and Steve Trevor tries to stop this, and he gets knocked in the head and taken over. So they put him on a robot plane to actually kill him, but he's smart enough about flying that he takes over the plane and goes after his captors, and he starts chasing this one guy who's in a faster plane. And that's when his plane runs out of fuel and crashes into Themyscira. He's actually chasing this Nazi. And so Hippolyta goes and talks to the gods, and they advise to her that they should have a contest to find a worthy Amazon to go to be with humanity, and that person will never be able to come back. And that's where the Rucka story is kind of real important, because if you read the George Perez and all the other story arcs, she can go back to Themyscira, you know, or she's the ambassador of Themyscira. Whereas Greg Rucka's take on this rebirth thing is she's trying to find her way back to Themyscira, and she doesn't know how to get there. Well, the gods in the first issue said she wouldn't be able to come back, so she tells her daughter she can't be part of the competition. So she wears a mask, and this is very much like the TV show, even if you're into the Linda Carter thing. And she wins every competition. It comes down to two women. And this is the part I found absolutely fascinating. In the Greg Rucka Year One, they have a gun battle where she Hippolyta shoots a gun at three of the contestants and sees who can reflect the bullets. And she ends up shooting two of the Amazons. But in this one, it's a standoff. The one Amazon has to shoot at Diana, and she blocks every bullet. And then Diana shoots her gun and tags the other Amazon in the shoulder. And then she realizes that she's Wonder Woman, and she has to go to Patriarch's world. And really good story. I mean, it's really a work of art by Charles Moulton, who's a fascinating character in himself.
Oh, yeah.
The creator of the lie detector and the man with many women.
Yeah.
But
Did I listen to an audiobook of the book that they did that was all about him and the creation of Wonder Woman and stuff. I forget the
yeah.
name of it right now, but it was fascinating. Definitely one of the more unique individuals to have created a very prominent, popular superhero.
And the bracelets are there too to remind them of the time that they were in slavery amongst the men, you know, Hercules and his men. So they were there for a reason. They don't just reflect, you know, deflect bullets, but it's to show them that they were slaves to man.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting how with a lot of the iconic characters, I mean, the more things have changed, there's a lot that just from the beginning was there.
Yeah.
Which, part of the reason that those characters happen to have stood the test of time, even though they update them and make alterations to keep them up to date, there's those essential qualities, the things that really matter are kind of there from the beginning, which is pretty neat.
Yeah, this is I'm actually reading this from the Golden Age Wonder Woman Omnibus Volume 1.
Oh, okay.
And it is a beautiful omnibus. I'm a fan of these omnibuses. They
Yeah.
cost about $75. But there's no way, like with most of these books, yeah, I own Batman number 4, but most of these books I'm not gonna ever own. Like I know I won't.
Yeah.
So like to have a good hardcover where you have all these Golden Age stories. And I'm finding myself, I used to be more of a Bronze Age guy. Like I like love the Bronze Age and above. And then I like the Silver Age, and I was always like, I don't know, the Golden Age was the hardest for me to get to just because it's so dense. I mean, it could take you like hours to read a whole comic because of all the stories in there. Like Chris picked Detective Comics. What was it? 444. And I still haven't finished it. Because what it is it was a new story up front, which dealt with Talia, and then it was all these Golden Age stories in the back.
Oh, okay.
And those stories were awesome. I mean, I was like, holy mackerel, these are great stories. Yeah, they're dense, and you have to be in the mood to absorb some of that. But the other part I'm really enjoying is like Archie, how they'll throw the Golden Age Archie in the back of the current books. I like love reading that stuff, even more so than the story that's up front.
Right.
But so I'm starting to get into the Golden Age lately. So these omnibuses they're beautiful things. They're heavy though. They're not like comfortable. Like if they would have kept that line that we started reading, which was like the what was it called? The Chronicles.
Chronicles, yep.
If they would have kept that up, that would have been a better way to like read it, because it's a lap book. The
Right.
omnibus, you really have to sit on a table, you know? Just so you because you want to keep the spine pristine, and you don't want to it's so much weight that you kind of want to read while you're sitting down and the book is on a table. So that's the disadvantage of the hardcovers.
Yeah, I really wish they would have kept that Chronicles line going. That would have been such a fun thing to collect, but what can you do?
I guess the demand just wasn't there.
Yeah, they gotta run a business, apparently.
I'm
So.
hoping they keep, at least we have like two volumes, three volumes of Batman and two volumes of Superman. We have a Hal Jordan one coming out in these hardcovers in a flash. I hope they at least go like four or five deep, but that's just wishful thinking on my part.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, if they sell well enough,
I'm sure that if anybody's got a chance, it's Batman. You know?
And I think him and Superman, those were the Chronicles that went the lot that had the most volumes.
Yeah.
They were the only ones really that went more than four, I think.
Yeah, Wonder Woman, I think, only had three, and Flash had I don't know how many, and Green Lantern was the other one. And the Justice League one, they solicited, but it never came out.
Yeah, that's kind of when they switched over and decided, because it wasn't long after that they did the Justice League, the first Justice League omnibus. But Flash, there were four, because I have all those. I know I have all of those, but anyway, all right. Well, I got a little something different here. I read Nth Man, the Ultimate Ninja, number one.
That doesn't even ring a bell.
It's actually a Marvel series,
Yeah.
and it came out in 1989. I remember seeing these. I don't know if I ever had an issue of it. It only ran for 16 issues, apparently.
That's a pretty good run in today's terms.
Yeah, today's terms, yeah. So I do. I mean, I was collecting comics at the time, so I don't know if I just remember seeing it on the stands, because I don't know if I ever had an issue of it.
Is this number one that you're talking about? Okay.
And the character, I think, first appeared when I was just after I read it. I was looking it up. Character first appeared in, I think it was Marvel Spotlight.
Marvel Comics Presents 25.
Okay, thank you. And then this issue, but it's actually written by Larry Hama, with pencils by Ron Wagner. So good creative team, and I think Ron Wagner did pretty much all but one issue. And it's very, if you like G.I. Joe, it's different in a lot of ways, but there's some similarities in that you have a war setting, with some characters that have abilities beyond the normal, but it's actually it takes place in a different continuity than the regular Marvel universe, and it's actually takes place in World War III, It's about 6 months into the war, and a group of Americans are attacking the Soviet Union, and they have allies with the Chinese because the Chinese is also doing like a flanking maneuver to the south of the Soviet Union. The main sort of representative or a character for the Soviet Union is Colonel Novikova. She's kind of like a, she sort of reminded me of Brigitte Nielsen in the 80s. She's a real tall, blonde woman with short hair.
Rocky.
Yeah.
Rocky 3. Or no, 4.
Yeah.
It was the Russian.
Right. But yeah, so it's sort of interesting. It sort of throws you into the attack, and then you sort of get filled in on the background through different reports, different things on the television in the background and stuff. That there was this individual named Alfie O'Megan, an American, and you sort of get filled in his background. He was brought up on a family farm, adopted, brought up on a family farm in Iowa, which almost kind of made me think of that they were alluding to Superman a little bit. But he has telekinetic abilities, and he eventually was on getting tested in a government facility when he finds out that his parents died in a car crash. And when he finds out, he falls into a coma for a decade. And when he comes to, he offers his powers to the US government. And but then the CIA ends up, you know, putting him in a secret bunker. And when he's not happy with that, he eliminates, he uses his powers to somehow basically eliminate all nuclear weapons. And so that's sort of what kicked off the war. But you learn about that as other things are happening. And so the Americans come in, and as time goes on, you realize that they're working to, their main goal is actually to rescue a prisoner that the Soviets are just calling John Doe. And he has some kind of, this prisoner has some kind of grudge. I mean, that's the prisoner's nth man. You recognize him from the cover before you find out exactly who he is. But his initial mission, it seems, was to go after this, that they sometimes call the Ice Queen, this Colonel Novikova. When the Americans reach him, one of the Americans with them is an old man who is his trainer, it turns out, who, and the nth man kind of has a connection to the guy that started the whole war, the telekinetic, because he also has abilities, and they have some kind of history, and that other guy also appeared in Marvel Comics Presents 25, apparently. So we get the rescue attempt, and
That's
Dr. Yazoo.
interesting that they put it in Marvel Comics Presents if it's not in continuity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't think about that, but Dr. Yagyu is the name of his mentor, and the writing is really enjoyable. They have a good rapport between them. It really feels like an action movie kind of, and it definitely is Larry Hama in the way that you have tons of editor's notes because he uses all the different military lingo and stuff like he does in G.I. Joe, where and then they have the editor's notes to explain different things and different Russian slang terms and the names of different weapons and vehicles and things like that. So it feels like G.I. Joe in that regard. So when they rescue Nth Man, they tell him his mission is canceled to take out the Colonel. That they got a that they have a new mission, but he's not the type to give up on a mission when he's been given it. He wants to see it through. So he leads them out. They base him and Dr. Yagyu and the Marines launch an attack on the location that the Colonel's at, and they take her prisoner. And they do kind of like to get out. They do the sort of thing where they give the Colonel an unloaded rifle, and they pretend that she's leading them out, even though Dr. Yagyu is dressed up like a Soviet and has a real gun trained on her, and until they get in the vehicle, and then they're able to take off. But once they've gotten away from the compound, Nth Man kisses the Colonel and then throws her out of the car. So he doesn't execute her, but because of the Soviet, because of their rules and stuff like that, that they'll she'll be shot as a traitor for apparently helping them escape. So it kind of ends a little bit abruptly. The last panel is just the Colonel. She's been thrown into a puddle, and she's just kind of sitting there as they take off. But yeah, it was. I thought, honestly, when I picked this up out of the cheap bin, I thought it was. I thought it would be kind of like a kind of a laugh to read. Like it'd be kind of cheesy.
Yeah, it sounds interesting.
The ultimate ninja, you know, and he's on the cover is him shooting a weapon with one hand, and then he's spinning a katana or a similar blade with his other hand. So I thought it would be like sort of tongue in cheek, a little cheesy, but it's actually a really interesting setting, and you know, the Larry Hama, like if you like G.I. Joe, you might enjoy this. As I said, the Larry Hama writing is really good, and the Ron Wagner art is really good. So it's a quality creative team. I guess they originally were planning on to do 24 issues, and it got cut short, but they still sort of worked to give it an ending and stuff. So yeah,
Is that the only one you own?
that's the only one I own. Yeah, I just picked it
Yeah.
up to try it out, but
Yeah, you're expecting something a little campy, maybe.
Definitely. Yeah, but it wasn't. It was and I might have still enjoyed it in for that way, you know.
Yeah.
But I was pleasantly surprised with it, and I would like to check out the rest of the series. I don't think it's a series you really hear much about, and I don't know if it's ever been traded or not. But if it was, I don't
I
believe it
doubt
was
it.
anytime recently. So, but this issue is really cheap. I don't think any of the issues are hard to get or anything, but I haven't really looked into it too much yet.
Yeah, no trade.
Yeah.
And the one issue that he didn't draw, Ron Wagner, was Dale Quinone, so that guy's pretty popular. Popular name, you know, for creating the Pit and doing stuff in Image and for Hulk. It seems like during that time frame when like McFarlane and Liefeld and all those guys came out, that whoever followed them was also successful. You know? 'Cause you had like Eric Larson follow, you know, doing that, and Kurt Busiek on Spider-Man, and Dale Quinone followed on the Hulk. So like, yeah, that's interesting.
Oh, that's right.
They all had successful careers and all went over to Image at some point.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks like all the issues are available on my comic shop for $1.35, which is about as cheap as they get on that
Yeah, because
site.
you'd go searching at a con for a dollar, but you wouldn't be able to find all of them, so
Yeah. But
the demand probably is not very high.
no. So you probably find them even cheaper, but You might have to pick them up, piecemeal or whatever. But yeah, so I was pleasantly surprised by this. I really liked it.
So my next pick is The Champions with Hercules, Black Widow, Angel, Ghost Rider, and Iceman. Also Venus, because she starts off in issue one. I covered issue one in this episode, and I talked about how this series is the reason that I got into collecting back issues. This is when I started to get into older issues instead of just what was off the shelf. And this is written by Tony Isabella, and the artist is Don Heck, and the editor is Marv Wolfman. And I've always been what attracted me to this team is the sheer weirdness of it. When I was younger, I was always like, "Oh, you can't find these characters anywhere else. You don't find Ghost Rider too much, Hercules." Yeah, you saw a lot of Angel and Iceman in the early X-Men, but once they the Uncanny X-Men, and Giant Size came along, you didn't see them too much until later. And then there
Right.
was Black Widow. The thing I find fascinating about is it's such a odd group, and the way they met was at the university, like I talked at the last episode. And the main villain is Pluto, along with Ares and Hippolyta, which is interesting, the connection there between Wonder Woman and this, and then the gods as well, is Pluto comes down and says, "Hey, if Hercules doesn't marry Hippolyta and Ares doesn't marry Venus, the universe is gonna die." And Hercules and them are like, "Hell with this, this ain't gonna happen." So it gets in a big old fight. Pluto pretty much takes out Hercules, and then the rest of the champions are left because they're not really a team yet. But Black Widow starts taking ownership of the team, like shouting out commands for people to do certain things. And they try to get Hercules back because he's going to take Hercules. And they manage to do so. They manage to keep Venus from getting captured and Hercules from getting captured, and Iceman's able to seal the portal which they came through. And Pluto decides to go to Zeus, and he convinces Zeus that this marriage must happen, even though Zeus doesn't want to partake in it. He's kind of forced to, and he's really betraying Zeus because either way he's going to take out Zeus. So that leads them to sending off the Huntsman after the team. And this guy looks like ridiculous. Oh, he doesn't even look like a god. At least the gods that are with Pluto look very Kirby-esque, like Kirby-esque designs. The Huntsman is a guy with like a staff that's on flaming, and he could travel on flames, and he's wearing purple with maroon boots and maroon underwear and maroon gloves, and he travels like the Iceman on a sled of flame, and he has this weird ability to like his flame hits there and he's able to take out the gods, like to put him he paralyzes them, but it doesn't work on Ghost Rider because he's from hell. So he's able to fight off the Huntsman and at least get the team back together. But he's such a weird character. And the Huntsman unleashes this other beast that fights them. And the Angel and Iceman are kind of used to take him down. And Black Widow finally trips him up. And they take the staff away from the Huntsman. So he loses his abilities, or some of his abilities anyway. But he's able to still do magic. And he brings an image of Pluto, Ares, and Hippolyta to distract them, even though they're not really them. And Ghost Rider ends up blasting them and finds out he just blasted some of his own teammates. So they used like hallucination to go after him. And sure enough, the Huntsman gets what he wants, and he takes Hercules and Venus to Pluto. And we'll see next issue if the marriage actually happens. And the team kind of feels like they were defeated, and they're actually blaming Ghost Rider. At least Angel and Iceman are. It's all your fault because you were supposed to guard them, and And so everybody goes off in their own directions. Black Widow goes off in her direction. Angel and Iceman are still in college together, and they're buddies because of the X-Men. And then Ghost Rider goes off on his own, and we'll see what happens next next issue. But yeah, it was an entertaining issue. All for a marriage, and you know Pluto is just there to screw things up. And this is another issue I'm trying to seek out, like as far as back issues and buying it, is some of the old Hercules appearances in Thor. And it references that in one of the boxes. It says that Pluto used Hercules to fight Thor in Thor 222 and 223. So, nice little footnote in there. And the Huntsman's first appearance is in Submariner 29, in case you're dying to get that issue. I love how old issues did that, though,
Yeah.
because it would lead you down these rabbit holes. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, I mean, you couldn't just look it up on the internet, so
Yeah.
it's cool that they did that. And which issue did you say that was of Champions?
Number two.
Number two. Okay.
Yeah.
So just following up. That's cool. Yeah, it's such a bizarre, not only is the team bizarre, it's kind of it's funny how they the it sort of was fitting the different plots and villains that they faced were also kind of out there. It's pretty cool. So the next one I have was is also published by Marvel, but under the Epic Comics imprint. It's Stalkers number one. This was a $1.50 book in
You've been really good lately at picking stuff I know nothing about.
Yeah, from my little supply of random stuff that I got from the 50-cent box set, 80s and 90s stuff that I knew nothing about either. This came out in 1990. I have heard of the artist though, and the I think the re writers too. The writers and creators are Jan Strnad and Mark Verheiden. And but the and the artist,
He's a big TV guy.
yeah, I've seen those names. The artist is Mark Teixeira, though, which obviously is known for a lot of stuff. First stuff, what for me, I think, was Wolverine. But this is kind of like Nth Man in a way, in that you sort of jump in. It starts out in 1999, which obviously was the future at the time, and you have this group of stalkers that are these sort of seem like militarized police or something like that when you're just starting out. The story is called Motown Madness, and basically, it seems like this mission is going wrong, and you're not really sure what's going on. But one of them, his name's Fowler. It seems to be his fault, and in the title page shows something that happened that is where there's a lot of death, and it seems like this. Mike Fowler is the one that screwed up, and that it's his fault. But then it jumps over to another individual named Studeman, white older guy, gray hair. He's getting ready in the morning and thinking back to his company days. It seems like he used to work for this auto company. And Mitsu's, and he was in charge when they brokered this merger. But after the merger was finalized, he was kicked out, and basically blames that for ruining his life. And says that this was that they've forced his wife to divorce him and basically blame everything that happened on that, whether it's true or not. This is all through captions. I knew she could never face the pain of life without me. It was better this way. And so you think he's just getting ready in his house, but then it becomes questionable whether he's even supposed to be there because he opens the door and we see that this particular room, TV's smashed. There's all this wreckage in the middle is his what must be his wife, and beneath her is all this blood. So it may be that he doesn't even actually live there anymore. So then it goes to this place called Crazy Teddy's, and it's just one of those used sale used car salesman kind of guys that's just all about the promotions and stuff like that. And he gets attacked by terrorists that take his crew hostage. And this is actually kind of a diversion set up by the student. Meanwhile, he goes to the Mitsu auto plant, and he shows up with in his car with he's hauling like a little moving one of those like little moving trucks that you actually connect back to the back of your vehicle. And so the security guy at the gate recognizes him. You know, he pretends like, "Oh, we're actually, I actually have a meeting, so I don't have anything on the list here that you have a meeting." So that's when he pulls out this like huge bazooka, total overkill. He just fires it on the security guard and blows up the entire security booth and stuff. So that obviously sets off the alarms and. At that point, you know, he opens up the gates and lets in a bunch of associates that he's got, that more terrorists, and they launch a violent assault on the plant. He kicks down the door of the president, and the president, the way that he reacts to Studeman seems like Studeman's. Obviously, at this point, it's very clear that he's nuts. And we, he talks to the president and says, "You know, I built this company, saved it." And the president says, "Yeah, I know. I read all about it in that science fiction novel you called your autobiography." So Studeman clearly has some issues with his own importance. So he's got some kind of bomb, and he's planning to negotiate. And then we switch over to the a board of directors that are in charge of the Stalkers organization, and this way we get a little more of a sense of the world that's going on, and the Stalkers organization. It's basically kind of like a volunteer police force, and they have TV commercials and stuff. They sort of aim them at men that in their late teenage years or early 20s that don't have a lot of money. They pull them in with kind of like some critics of the military would say that the military does, you know, with the salary and the benefits and stuff like that. So since we after we get a little more of a sense of what the stock organization is about, that's when things get called in that there's this terrorist attack on the used car salesman's place. And this is when the character from the beginning, Mike Fowler, comes back in. He said, "You know, this is happening in Detroit. So who do we have in Detroit? Iron Mike Fowler." It's like, I thought he was still on suspension. So they call him in, and meanwhile, outside Crazy Teddy's, there's people selling T-shirts, and the whole scene has become like a circus. And even Crazy Teddy himself is like running a nuclear sale. he's running a sale based on the fact that the whole place is being held by terrorists. He even offers a deal to the stalkers when they arrive. And this is where we find out some more that President Quail, so it seems to be like some kind of alternate reality where Quail became president. But he issued Executive Order 5510, which the press described as the Terrorist Hostage Bill of Rights. So basically, he said that containing deterrence comes from strength, that containing a terrorist event takes precedence over the lives of the hostages. So America's terrorist policy became shoot first, ask questions later. And so zero tolerance. And so they make an attack on the, they don't negotiate. And the stalkers, they come in, they just start shooting. And as long as they take out terrorists, doesn't matter if they take out all the hostages while they're at it. And so they are successful. They leave one terrorist alive for interrogation. And the stalkers are kind of celebrities, like you see when they arrive. This one woman's like telling Fowler that she wants to have his baby. And people like the crowd that was there to watch all this happen is cheering and stuff. But the issue ends with them telling like Fowler that this guy tells Fowler that this whole thing might have been a diversion. And basically Fowler finds out what we already know about that there's that this is probably a diversion to the real attack on the by Studeman on the auto manufacturer, and that they have a bomb. So that's where the issue ends. But yeah, I enjoyed this one too. Another kind of surprise, the cover is just a stalker with his helmet on and stuff, and the helmet is behind the logo, and the logo has a target over top of it. Really didn't know exactly what I was getting into, and I didn't even notice until I started reading it that Mark Silvestri was the artist. It definitely reminds me of his work on Wolverine around this time, style-wise and stuff. But interesting commentary on society, and even though it came out in 1990, like it kind of is like with considering one of the presidential candidates we have and his sort of his attitude, it's sort of it's apropos, I'd say,
Yeah.
right now, just this whole interesting look, kind of like a political satire in some ways
When you
of
said
society.
Silvestri, isn't it Texiera?
Oh, did I just say Silvestri just now?
Yeah.
Yeah, Teixeira, yeah, or Tech. How do you say his name? I think the baseball player you say one way and the artist you say another, but
Yeah. Why? I know he's to sign things Tex, but
that's true. Yeah.
yeah, so I don't know. Because
Yeah, I think
I know him mostly from the 90s Ghost Rider stuff.
Ghost Rider too, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
I
more
think
so
of
than
that too.
Wolverine because I followed Ghost Rider more than I did Wolverine.
That's true. Yeah, I used to get both of those, so he was definitely an artist that
Oh,
was
he
on
did
my
the
radar.
Sabretooth. You might have already said that, though. That he did the Sabretooth mini.
No, I didn't
That's what I
look for that.
remember him from. Because he has a real thick line. It's really dark, too.
Yes, definitely. That's definitely a good way to describe it.
Yeah.
But yeah, another series I had not heard of and definitely enjoyed. It's pretty cool. I meant to look up, see how long the series ran,
I could tell you,
which I'll
well,
do.
12 issues.
Okay. Yeah, I figured with it being an epic comic that it
It's
wasn't
interesting too, though. Every time you say something, I bring up Comic Base, which is my database of choice,
right.
where I store everything. And issue 2 has clowns in it.
Oh, there you go. You could pick it up for Barb.
Yeah, and then the other book that you had, the one that I remember I told you Dale Keown drew, it had clowns in it. So I'm like, that's weird.
Weird.
Because I kind of like just I mouse over the covers.
Yeah, they're creeping up on me.
Actually, it's issue 5 that has the clowns. That's pretty creepy. It's clowns with the Uzi, and one of them says, "If you thought the first one was funny, this one will kill you." And he's holding an Uzi.
Yeah, that definitely sounds like a comic you should get for your wife.
Yeah.
But yeah, again, these it looks like these all 12 issues are available really cheap. But this was a decent start at least.
Yep, and you got fill-in issues with Val Mayerick, who I've heard of, and Pat Parobek, Mike Parobek. Very different style there. He does issue 10,
Okay.
1990.
Yep.
Very cool. Well, I wasn't as experimental as you. I tried to do. I was like, what do I want to do? And then Ross had a good idea. Why don't you do Halloween themed? But I was like, you know what? I think I want to do one DC, one Marvel, and one independent.
There you go.
And so I chose something that I've read 12 freaking times. I don't know why I did that, but I felt in the mood to reread it. You know, we talk about being mood readers, and I did an in-depth episode of it on Valiant Versus. So I reread Exo Man of War number one, and it's one of those books that I just can't get enough of. And I'm reading it out of, I have this printed, let's see, I have maybe two, three copies of the comic, and then I have different versions, like a gold edition, this one and a couple others, and then I have it in an omnibus, which is a huge, thick omnibus. But before that, Valiant, like before Valiant really became a company, when they started to acquire the properties, Dinesh and crew released three hardcovers of old material, and they were really small hardcovers, and you had to order them. They weren't even diamond solicited, if I remember correctly. You had to order them through a website, and that's what I'm reading this one from, is from the hardcover. It even has original material in the back of a story that's never been told of one of the spider aliens. I haven't read it yet, but maybe for a future episode. But this is Exo Man of War number one, and I absolutely love this because it's sci-fi based with history and a barbarian, and I love Conan, and I love sci-fi, and I love Iron Man, and this all kind of puts it together. And it starts off on a ship with a bunch of action where Arik is pretty much naked this whole issue. And he's fighting spider aliens, just crushing them. And he calls them the hard skins. And then, you know, like when he runs into other people like him, he calls them the soft skins. And it's told mostly through caption because he doesn't speak, or nor can he understand what the spider aliens are saying. They talk in clicks and clacks and all that stuff. But he runs across a ring and he puts the ring on. And later on, he hits the XO armor, and the ring attaches to the XO armor and assembles around his body. And he just starts like blasting holes in the ship, like destroying stuff from the inside out. And the spider aliens are sucked out in a vacuum, and he leaves and he heads towards Earth. And the one thing that's interesting about Arik is he's a barbarian from the Roman times. But in this issue one, you never get that. Like, you don't really know where he's from. It's the action starts off in the ship, and then he lands. And then the first thing he does is he wants to take off the armor because it doesn't feel natural. It's a very strange thing that surrounded his body. So he commands it off, and he just leaves the armor there. Walks off naked. He still has the ring, though. He left the ring on his finger, and he runs across a tribe there. And they, instead of attacking him or wondering why he's running around naked, they feed him, and he starts bonding with this tribe. Meanwhile, in New York, there's these spider aliens that look like humans. They're in human guise, and they're talking about getting the armor back. and they need to go send Cruz to go get the armor back. And they said, this guy's an idiot, you know, he doesn't know what he has. Let's go get it. But he says the primitive has the ring. We have to get the ring from him. So they send their people down, and while Arik is away, they go slaughter the whole tribe that he's with. And it is brutal. Like, they take the one woman that he started to care about, Maya, I think her name was that. And my it's spelled M apostrophe RRHA, Myra. I don't know. But they take her, and they take her head off, and they put it on a pike. And that really infuriates the hell out of him. So he's got his ring. He's going to seek out these people and seek vengeance for the people, the friends that brought him in and started feeding him. He felt like they started to become his people. So he takes that ring and he goes off on a journey to try to find these people. And he's drawn north. Like, the ring is drawing him to where the armor is, 'cause where he just left it. And the spider aliens picked up the armor. And he runs into a spider alien facility, and he starts blowing it to bits. Like, he destroys all their machines, their helicopters, their kills a bunch of them with a bazooka. The one female in here that's leading the organization sends another attack on him. And it's like, it looks like an area, I don't know what city this is, but it looks like a New Orleans, but it's in a foreign country. Because they're speaking another language and they don't let you usually know what they're speaking. It sounds like Spanish, so it might be somewhere in Spain. And there's a spider alien there that attacks him and bites him. And Arik immediately knows that this wasn't a venomous spider alien because he's like, well, they don't have the green stripes on them, so I might live. He says, I'm very lucky. And he meets Ken, who's a big part of this story and becomes part of Orb Industries, and he's really a bad guy. He's like leading Arik to the spider aliens. And if you've read the series, you know Ken is a gay man, and he's really infatuated with Arik and his naked body and stuff. But he's a good man. Like, he's good at heart, and he realizes way late that, like, Arik's like, this is my friend. Like, he calls him, you know, like his friend, and he's calls him a wizard because of the technologies and stuff he has. So he doesn't know about the betrayal, but before Ken actually goes to betray him, he's like, you need to get away from here. You need to run away. And Ken gets shot. So he never knows that Ken betrayed him, but he thinks Ken tried to save his life. And he summons the armor from far away with this ring. He's able to pull the armor into an orb and assemble next to him as he's fighting spider aliens and destroy, like, a spider alien that tank and take out the spider aliens, kill a whole bunch of them, and make sure that he saved Ken. Ken's still alive, but he's bleeding. And that's how issue one ends. And I just love, like, Exo Man of War, I just love it. I can't get enough of it. Like I said, this is probably my 12th reading, and I could have read something I hadn't read before, but I just felt like reading it. I think I was listening to a podcast. It might have been Valiant Central, and they were talking about Exo, and I was like, I want to read some more Exo. So I did.
Is yeah, I've read that issue, but I haven't read much of the actual series. Is that a series that stays pretty high quality?
Yeah, it's a really good one. Even the current series is amazing. It just ended. But I've liked it. I like all the incarnations, even though the second volume is really weird. Mark Waid and Brian Augustine take over, and it's like a total revamp for Acclaim. Like, not even Arik, you know? It becomes an armor, and he's kind of like a military Captain America guy running the armor. And there's a science guy along with it, but it really changes who the foundation of what that is. But it's not bad. I mean, it's just jarring. It's just like some of these evolutions of these superheroes, they do crazy stuff with it, you know, blue and red Superman. I mean, you just roll with the flow.
Wasn't that the kind of the case across the board with the Acclaim stuff? It was all sort of
Yeah, and
reinventions.
the only one to me that improved, and this is weird, but and there not a lot of people that are Valiant fans will say this, but Shadow Man, I think when they introduced Zero, they introduced more voodoo into it and violence, and I started to dig it more. Even though I loved it when it first came out with Jack, the Zero, there was something about the New Orleans voodoo that really drew me in. Like, where they went hardcore with the voodoo, and they made him a radio show host at one point. First he was an assassin, and then like one of those guys you call on the radio to get help, you know, like one of the, how do I fix my plumbing and that kind of stuff, or I'm in a relationship and my wife is doing this to me, what should I do? One of the, it was so bizarre, but man, it's so good. I wish they would. It's Valiant currently doesn't seem to like know what to do with Shadow Man, and I wish they would just say, these other things haven't worked, let's go with Zero and bring him back.
That's the only thing they haven't tried, really.
Well, they were game driven, Acclaim, so
Yeah,
they
right.
spent,
Their
you know,
main,
they wanted a character I think they could make more of an action first person shooter game with. So they created Zero, and I think it really worked. And the other character they changed a lot was Turok, so they could make their video games off of him.
Oh, right, yeah. Yeah, I remember. I think I played the Turok video game.
Yeah, it was definitely their most popular one. Like they had sequels to it, you know? So that tells me it was Shadow Man only had the one, and they had an Armorines game, and I don't know if there's anything else. I know they had the EXO Armor Man, Iron Man team up game,
Oh, okay.
but I don't know how that did or how it played. I never played any of them. It was the towards the era where I was out of video. I've never been a real big video gamer except when I was a kid with the Atari, and I really enjoyed the ColecoVision. And then I kind of dropped out until I moved here and started my job, and then I got back into gaming, but it was mostly for the sports. Like me and my friend would play NFL Madden until all the hours of the night, and baseball, the World Series baseball, and all the sport games we would play. And then I didn't, never really cared about the other types of games anymore. But that's a long discussion on XO, so I could go off on tangents. That's what I'm a tangent king.
No, but I the history of Valiant is interesting and their different properties because a lot of things that are comparable to Valiant just haven't come back. And so it's interesting that Valiant had enough of following that it has come back, and it had some different phases on the in between, and the way that the property has changed ownership, and just as a result, you have these different
That's
versions of the
because it
characters.
was bought by a true fan that just loved Valiant, Dinesh, you know?
Yeah, right.
I mean, when they worked to acquire the property, they worked hard, and they had a lot of battles
Yeah, I
because
remember hearing
they were starting to
some
get
of that.
into that what do they call it? Public domain shit. And there was another Valiant company that was going after it, and rumor has it there was dynamite, which they're notorious for. I think people that I like dynamite too, but I think they're notorious for like watching, like having lawyers and watching what properties are expiring and say, let's jump on this. We could do this. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely seems like it.
Yeah, because they do a lot of stuff with like the Golden Age Heroes and all kinds of other properties. They do license a lot of stuff too, but I think they have And they probably lost a lot of money just paying lawyers. You know what I mean? To be where they are today. The only thing that scares me about Valiant is once you get big money investors, like I've seen this happen with my wife's company, I see it happen all the time. It changes the direction. Do you know what I mean? And the more they sold, the less control you have. So from a fan perspective, like I could see them losing some control, especially if something, if their first release of their movie isn't successful or something, you know what I mean? Then
Yeah,
they could lose
absolutely.
everything. And then it'll be like the downfall of Valiant again, and then or the Ultraverse, or when you sell stuff, like when they sold to Marvel, or it's probably the smart thing, because that's what comp when you do a startup company, the best thing you could do if you're at the top is to sell it for what you want, and then you're on a beach hanging out with your mixed drink, and you've made what you want, right? And then if you're really interested, you could start up another company and do this, try to do the same thing and redo it. But I think it's a little bit different for Dinesh and crew, because I think their heart and soul is in, it's more passion, you know, it's passion about these characters as well as business. So it's a little different.
Yeah, they gotta try to find the right balance, 'cause you gotta, I mean, it's getting investors and stuff like that's a good way to keep the business sustained and trying to branch out into other media and stuff like that. But yeah, it's just you gotta try to keep the balance there. It's a
Yeah.
tough thing, can be a tough thing to do, but you want to stay in business, you know. You gotta
Right.
do what you gotta do to try to, you want to try to stay in business but still keep the integrity there and stuff.
Yeah. So what else you got for us?
All right, well, my last one, I'm changing up my approach here, and I'm talking about Blue Devil.
Oh, nice. One of my all-time favorites.
Yeah, and I'm actually talking about issue number 7, 'cause so I'm just jumping in kind of, well, I'm not jumping in my reading. I've been reading the series up to this point, but I'm just going to talk about the most recent issue. Kind of a fun cover. By Paris Collins, the regular artist on the series. It's from 1984. Danny and Sharon's first date, Blue Devil, plus our best new supervillain yet, and a 1959 pink Cadillac in perfect condition. And so you have Blue Devil, that's Danny and Sharon, in the middle of a big heart. But you got the trickster, who's been sort of a like a kind of a supporting character. Jesse James, the Flash villain, at the bottom,
It's 'cause
in
he
this
has the
series so
links to
far.
Hollywood too.
Right, yeah, I mean, it's
Yeah.
kind of appropriate. The whole stuntman, he's got the special effects and stuff like that. But
Yeah.
the story is called Just Another Day in LA. And like I said, Paris Collins, the regular artist on this series, but this is a guest artist, fill-in by Gil Kane. Gary Cohen and Dan Mishkin are your regular writers. And it does start out with the trickster. He's being pursued by gangsters that have been on his trail. They just keep following him wherever he goes. It's kind of funny, the gangsters are like think they'll send in Bolt. And wondering, you know, if they're just gonna, it's just gonna be them regular gangsters going after him. It's like the guy, another guy says, it's not like this guy's Goldfaced or Lex Luthor, he's a punk. But so Jesse decides, you
Wow,
know,
they're really elevating Goldface there.
yeah, it's kind of funny.
I'm a
Goldface and Lex Luthor.
Central City kingpin
Yeah.
that had ties into the unions.
Yeah. Well, I guess from their perspective, he's a big deal.
Yeah.
But so Jesse decides he's sick of running, that he's gonna put up a fight, and so he suits up and jumps out the window. His usual bag of tricks. He drops a bunch of water balloons on the gangsters, and then but things escalate because there's these guys on in suits of armors on these flying platforms that pursue him. So he throws like magnets at them to screw up their thing. And then the character Bolt is the supervillain that they're talking about. He gets into the fray. So despite what the gangsters thought, they do call in Bolt. And he's kind of got like he can fly, but he's got like as his name is pretty on the spot name implies, he shoots bolts. And he does get,
It's a teleporter too, right?
yes, yeah, because he kind of disappears suddenly, but right after he gets Trickster, he Trickster turns at the last second, so it only just wings him. But it throws him off, and he but he manages, he's falling, but he manages to fall into a dumpster to cushion his fall. So Trickster uses some illusion, some of his illusions to screw with the Bolt and make him think that he disappeared. But Trickster realizes that he's in kind of deep in the situation. And he thinks, I know just the guy to ask for help. Well, coincidentally, we switch on the title page, we switch over to Blue Devil, and he's actually at a it's still fairly fresh for him. It's only issue 7, this whole situation of being stuck in the Blue Devil suit. And so he's trying to adjust to that life, and he's with his producer and the other another actor, and they're trying to get clothes made for him. And even though he's trying on the biggest suit that they've got, but it's still too snug for him. He's like, "I thought you," he's yelling, "I thought you said Kareem Abdul-Jabbar bought clothes here." But he's like, "Yeah, he did. He's your height, but you're a lot wider." So that's all going on. Wayne Tarrant is the name of the other is kind of the, I mean, one of the things about the Blue Devil is got a really good supporting cast, and Wayne was one of the other actors on the picture that they were filming when Dan ended up getting trapped in the suit. And Wayne's like a womanizer, kind of a thinks real high of himself and stuff, and is alternately like jealous of Dan and competitive with him. And he's trying to like hit on a woman that works there and doesn't even realize that he had dated her before, and he didn't even recognize her. So she calls her friend when they leave to tell him. So things are continuing to be pretty difficult for Blue Devil. He's trying to drive a car, and he ends up like Fred Flintstoning it basically, because he accidentally rips the steering wheel off, and then he goes to step on the brakes, and his feet shoot right through the floor of the Porsche. So he purposely knocks out the windows with his fists and shoves his head through the roof, so he can actually see where he's going. He's like, "Come on, come on! This always worked for Fred Flintstone." He actually has to stop the car with his feet.
A lot of pop culture references in that issue.
Yeah, I know. I should have posted some of these references to our little Facebook group.
Yeah.
So, as it implies on the cover, Sharon, this other actress that he and she and Dan, they had already kind of had some interactions before, and even though he's stuck in the Blue Devil suit now, that's why he was trying to get an actual three-piece suit that would fit him, was to go on this date. So he does finally manage to get one made, And he's at his producer Marla's house, and he's going on his first date with Sharon, who's seems like has a strong character, in meaning her own personal character, because she's even though Dan is stuck in the suit, she's still interested in him and stuff. Well, of course, they can't have a date in peace, and eventually it ends up getting interrupted by the trickster, who shows up asking for Blue Devil's help because he's continuing to be pursued by the Bolt. And so, Blue Devil and the Trickster, they have this sort of connection, like you said, through the entertainment, Hollywood connection. They see each other kind of as coming from a similar background, even though the Trickster is taken more of a criminal path. There's still sort of this camaraderie there. So the Blue Devil does get into the fight to help him out, and they go up against this Bolt guy. Of course, the Blue Devil's suit, his three-piece suit, gets blasted and destroyed by the Bolt in the fight. And he's like, "Do you have any idea what that costed me? I'm gonna take it out of your hide." So they managed to get the Bolt down, and it's not even until then that Blue Devil even gets a chance to ask Trickster what that was all about, because everything happened so fast. And so he threatens Trickster that he better tell him what's going on. Either you tell me why Bolt wants to kill you, or I do it for him. So there, it says, next the Trickster gets cold feet, and no wonder, look at those flimsy shoes. So it kind of keeps up that, sort of light, tongue-in-cheek kind of nature that the series has. But the Trickster's, gonna have to fess up of what he's up to, and that it's not necessarily what the Blue Devil will be happy with. But yeah, so far, I finished up my run of this a while back, and had been meaning to dig into it. So every once in a while, I've been reading an issue and really enjoying them a lot. It's been living up to its reputation, that of what I'd heard about it.
Yeah,
And
what a great
Paris,
creation.
Gil Kane's a good he does a good job as a fill-in. I really prefer or I really like Paris Collins' art a lot, but
It kind of defined the character, that's why.
So you're used to that by the first six issues, but yeah, I'm looking forward to continue. It's just a real enjoyable read.
Cool beans. That's a series
Yeah,
that I'm very fond of.
it seems like people who like the Blue Devil series really love it,
Yeah, it was it, when it came out, it was like so different than everything else. Like, there wasn't anything like it.
Yeah, it still kind of stands out that way,
Yeah. Yeah, it had a comic relief to it too.
Right. Yeah, I think that's one of the things that kind of makes it continue to stand out.
And the Hollywood stuff seemed genuine. All the behind the scenes stuff that went on, it was really cool. And
Yeah, and
usually
it.
kind of only see that in like Wonder Man and Marvel and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and they did a good job, I think, when you have a solo characters series. They did a good job, really, of establishing a strong supporting cast for them. You have a lot of different characters that, whether it's bringing in the Trickster or having the different characters, they did a good job of all the characters from its background and stuff.
Yeah. All right. Good choices. I think the one that interests me the most as far as is the Nth Man. It sounds pretty interesting. Although I probably have his
Yeah, it
first
was pretty cool.
appearance. I didn't even look, but I probably do. I collected a lot of that Marvel Comics Spotlight or Marvel Comics Presents.
Right.
I miss anthologies like that. I like anthologies that were like that, that are cheap, that are not like an $8 price tag. It
Right.
just
Yeah.
was a good way to throw in like stories that couldn't be told on an ongoing, you know?
Yeah.
Or have characters that couldn't support a regular series.
Yeah, it'd be cool
But
if
the
they were
thing that
still
was cool
popular.
with Marvel Comics Presents is you could throw Wolverine, which would draw your fans in, right? And then have characters like the
Right, yeah.
Nth Man. Okay, so you have something to draw them in. Let's give them some Barry Windsor, Wolverine, and throw in these other characters and see how they stick.
Right. Yeah, it does seem like when if DC or Marvel does try an anthology series, a lot of times they just put a bunch of they look at it as an opportunity to put a bunch of lesser known characters in there. It doesn't seem like they take that approach anymore, where they'll put like one big draw in there, like Batman or something, in the first story, and then put a couple.
I would love for them to do that. Is like, and then make it mean something. Like, you could throw Batman in, and he could be like tied into a current event or something. You know what I mean? So, then you're almost like guaranteed the sales at a certain level. Like, some people won't go for it, but then you could get them interested in some of the other stories that you kind of want to grow, right? That like don't have a huge fan base, but you can grow.
Right.
And people say, "Oh, I really like this. This is good." I would love
Yeah,
to see something like that.
have it be in continuity. Be interesting.
All
So
right.
that's all I have.
Yeah, and you can reach us at geekbrunchpodcast.com on the Twitters at MythMakingETC. At Mike Myers Brunch, on emails, mythmakingetc@gmail.com and mike@comicbooknoise.com. We have a Facebook page under Geek Brunch Podcast. You could click the like button and follow the episodes there. And leave an iTunes review. We could use some more of those. And that's a loud motorcycle.
I'll say somebody's real cruising past your joint.
I left the. We have a really nice day. I left the screen door open, so I'm getting a lot of outdoor traffic. But I think that's it. You want to plug your other podcasts?
Yes, sir. Sure. Just you could check out MythMaking, etc. blogspot.com. We have Comic Book Booster Club, which I do with Rob Krieger, and that's a monthly show. We talk about more recent comics, and then I just do my solo podcasts, From Kid to Flash, which has kind of been monthly lately as well, looking at Wally West, and then I also do episodes of Mythmaking, etc. And lately I've started a series called Post Crisis Pull List on there, where I'm looking at on a monthly basis just different books that DC was publishing after when they started the Post Crisis universe. So
Yeah, and
that's what I'm up to besides this.
for me, it's Geek Brunch Retro, Mike M's Weekly Reads. I gotta do the collector stuff, but I gotta find time to do it. Yeah, and I haven't given up on it. Yeah,
I
and
tweeted you that I was looking forward to another episode of that, and that wasn't to put pressure on you, because I know you do it when you can. It just was to let you know that I enjoyed the ones that you had done so far. I'm looking
Oh,
forward to.
they're a lot of fun to do. From my perspective, it's not like an interview, but it's like digging into people's collecting mentalities and
Right.
differences, and that's what I like about doing that. But 'cause I like to learn how they collect and stuff like that. So
Yeah.
that one's a fun to do, but it's a different person every time, so you have to
Right.
coordinate it. And the only one that's easy for me to do is Mike M's because it's me and it's spur of the moment. I could do it at midnight if I want, if I can't sleep.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of why for the longest time, the only podcasting I did besides this one was solo stuff, and then it worked out for Rob and I that we could schedule something, but we decided just to try to keep it up on a monthly basis just 'cause so we could
I think I'm
coordinate.
about halfway through the last episode, and he was doing things in alphabetical order this time too. What the hell? He did Animosity and then Batman, and what's wrong with that guy?
I didn't even notice that he did
Son of
that.
a gun.
He likes his organization.
Jeez. I don't know anybody else that does that. Seriously.
That across the board, or just
Across
reads
the
their
board,
comics that
yeah.
way. Yeah, I'm sure there's others. I mean, I do that to some extent sometimes.
Well, you said you're trying to, but I don't think you consciously do it.
Yeah, it depends. It depends on my mood, whether I feel like how I feel like deciding if I don't
Mood's
want to
important.
decide
Mood's
anyway.
so important, though, in reading. Like, in you making, like, whether you like something or not. Because if you pick the wrong time to read something, like if I pick something that's dense, like right before bed, I'm not gonna like it. Like some of the like if I read Superwoman, that book is dense. I read that like bright early morning. It has to happen when my mind is fresh. It's got a lot of material in it. If I read Deathstroke, I have to do that in the morning. But like if I could do like Supergirl or some of the more lighthearted stuff at night, really late at night. That's when I love to read like Archie or something.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of do. I'll put my comics in order, but that I think is one of the main things I do pay attention to is not necessarily reading something real dense, like the examples you gave
Yeah.
right before bed.
Some people it might work for, maybe that's what they need to decompress, but I need something very light. I don't want my brain to think too much. I just want to go to
Right.
bed. Yeah. All right. Well, that oh yeah, DC Noise and DC Noise DC Weekly Reads, which is a weekly podcast about everything DC. And I've been
Yep.
keeping up with everything, like
Yeah.
everything. And it's a
Yeah.
weird, it's very different because it goes against that mood thing.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? I especially notice it when I do Geek Brunch because Geek Brunch, we're like all over the place. We look at the indies stuff, all that stuff, a bunch of number ones. And then I
Right.
want to go down that rabbit hole. Like, I want to read 2, 3, and 4 because we read issue one. And I have them, and but then I have to keep up with the other thing. You know what I mean? And it's like a fire hose.
Right, you have to make sure that you keep up with that you don't fall behind on the DC.
Yeah. And I'm loving those Epic collections, by the way. I love the format. I want to have every single one. Right, Barb? Barb, you think I should have every single Epic collection, right?
No.
How happy were you about Giant Size X-Men?
Was disappointed because it wasn't, I thought it was going to be giant.
Oh.
She took it literally.
Yeah, she thought that small thing, I thought it was going to be like one of those Treasury editions. She was disappointed.
That's funny. She sounds like she's pretty close. What is she like sitting on your lap or something?
No, she's not sitting on my lap. She's standing outside looking at all the birds.
Ah, I should have guessed.
Yeah.
He's getting ready to do Eagle Cast.
Yeah. She saved a bird's life. Did you hear about this?
I saw that. Yeah, it was stuck in the fence or something.
Yeah. You know how the fence wooden fences have those little slits in between the pieces of wood?
Right.
He had his feet stuck in there. And he was hanging upside down. And I thought he was dead, at least when I saw him, which was long after because I got home from work like at 7 or whatever. It's really dark. But he stood in the corner of our fence. Like, Harley leaves him alone. She's weird. She like doesn't hunt squirrels or rabbits or she left him alone, and he spent the night like he was gonna die or freeze, and the next morning he flew away. So
That's
let's hope
cool.
he's okay. But the bird whisperer over here, she talks to birds.
Yeah. Good job, Barb.
Yeah, lifesaver. She
There you go.
gave it mouth to mouth.
Yeah,
Resuscitated it. You're not breathing. He's like, she pushed in his chest and breathed in there.
that's pretty. I didn't even know you could do that with a bird. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. All right, well, we'll talk to you next time.
All right.
Next time I might not be able to do it in 2 weeks.
Okay, well,
I
just
think
let me
we're in
know.
Arizona, so
Yeah, as we get
unless
closer
we could
again.
do an earlier one. But we'll keep it in mind. I'll talk to you later.
Okay, sounds good. Have a
All
good day, my friend.
right. You too.
Bye-bye.